By the way, during the musical break, someone called up to correct me on the pronunciation of Die Zeit. It's not Die Zeit, it's Die Zeit, according to this individual. I have no reason to doubt him. But I want to note in passing that I do not speak German, so as I said to him, when you're doing hours of cold read, and these are unrehearsed readings, obviously I edit the material, but not speaking German, inevitably there will be some mispronunciations, so people should bear with me on that score. Having looked at the reinstitution of political leadership from the Third Reich, we're now going to take a look at the reinstitution of the Third Reich civil service, the exclusion by law of people who had been excluded from the Third Reich civil service, the exclusion from the civil service of the new Germany, and then we're going to take a look at the reinstitution of the Third Reich judiciary and its effects on German society. And again, we're going into this by way of understanding the nature of the quote new unquote Germany, this by way of understanding the state that was running the Gehlen organization, which was installed at the core of NATO and which functioned in a dominant way in the Cold War period and in American life, as we looked at in earlier installments of this broadcast. And by the way, for the benefit of people who hear this on tape or are hearing just this broadcast, I began this massive archive series on July 26th of this year and will be going for another couple of weeks. Please get a hold of the other tapes, and we are in the process of doing transcriptions. And also, by the way, if there are people in the listening audience who are capable of doing transcription, or people who know people who are capable of doing transcription, or who have scanners, please contact Archives on Audio at 415-346-1840, 415-346-1840. We're going to take a look now, as I mentioned, at the reinstitution of the civil service of the Third Reich as a matter of law passed by the Bundestag, and we're also going to take a look at the exclusion by the Bundestag as a matter of law of those barred for racial reasons from participating in the civil service of the Third Reich. We're going to rely for our documentation on this and for much of the rest of tonight's installment of Radio Free America 37 from a book called Hitler's Justice, subtitled The Courts of the Third Reich. This was authored by a German law professor named Ingo Müller, I-N-G-O, capital M-U-L-L-E-R, with an umlaut over the U. It was translated by Deborah Lucas Schneider, S-C-H-N-E-I-D-E-R, published in hardcover by the Harvard University Press, copyrighted 1991. Of the author Ingo Müller, and by the way, this book, to the credit of the other Germany that T.H. Tettens talks about in his book, this book became a bestseller in Germany. Ingo Müller is described on the overleaf as, Ingo Müller is an official of the Justice Department of Bremen and a former law professor. Now, what we're going to talk about here are two laws passed by the Bundestag. One of them is Article 131, and one of them is Article 132. Now, the technical legal discussion here will get fairly dense. Let me just basically describe the upshot of these laws. And Ingo Müller does this, but some of the linguistic maneuvering here is rather complicated and not readily discernible to the uninitiated observer, to those unfamiliar with legal and parliamentary maneuvering, and I'm no expert in that regard myself. Article 131, which is one of the central things we're going to be discussing here, reinstituted the Third Reich civil service for all intents and purposes, this as a matter of German law. And we're going to talk now about the debate, the parliamentary council and the debate on Article 131, reading from Hitler's Justice, The Courts of the Third Reich by Ingo Müller. In the debates of the parliamentary council, which was meeting to draft a new German constitution, the delegates, many of whom were high-level civil servants themselves in various ministries, could not agree on a policy for civil servants with an incriminating Nazi past. The first version prepared by the drafting committee had included the statement, quote, any person who was a civil servant or government employee on May 8, 1945, cannot claim a right to re-employment on these grounds, unquote. Recall that was the official date of the German surrender in World War II. Continuing, in the final debate, however, the council decided to postpone a solution to the problem and Article 131 of the Basic Law, Grundgesetz, Grundgesetz, as it was eventually passed, directed future lawmakers, quote, to regulate by federal law the rights of persons employed in the civil service as of May 8, 1945, including refugees and those expelled from their homes, who ceased to be employed there for reasons other than those covered by the civil service or salary laws, and who until now have either not found employment at all or not at the former level, unquote. When the Bundestag, federal parliament, by the way, it's B-U-N-D-E-S-T-A-G, beginning again, when the Bundestag, federal parliament, met to discuss such a law, no mention at all was made of the reasons why the judges and civil servants had been dismissed. Instead, members of parties across the entire political spectrum spoke of the need to help these, quote, admirable people, unquote, who had, quote, spent a lifetime in public service, unquote, so that, quote, the group affected by Article 131 can feel they are recognized as valuable members of the state, unquote. References were also made to the, quote, reestablishment of a constitutional state, unquote, a task for which, quote, the contribution of their knowledge, experience, and manpower, unquote, was needed. The statute referred to colloquially as the 131 law was passed on May 11, 1951, effective retroactively as of April 1st. In effect, it gave a foundation in law to the reintegration of Nazi officials in the civil service, a process that was by then almost complete in any case. After an amendment was added in August of 1953, the statute gave all public servants of the National Socialist State a legal claim to reemployment and also the right to claim back pay for the time they had not been able to work. These last two sentences again, because they really explain some of the complicated legal maneuvering delineated above. Last three sentences, actually. The statute referred to colloquially as the, quote, 131 law, unquote, was passed on May 11, 1951, effective retroactively as of April 1st. In effect, it gave a foundation in law to the reintegration of Nazi officials in the civil service, a process that was by then almost complete in any case. After an amendment was added in August of 1953, the statute gave all public servants of the National Socialist State a legal claim to reemployment and also the right to claim back pay for the time they had not been able to work. The sole exceptions were agents of the Gestapo and civil servants who had been classed as, quote, major offenders, unquote, in denazification proceedings. In addition, the law required that at least 20% of employees in all departments of public administration be former Nazis. Departments failing to meet this requirement would be fined an amount equal to the salaries thus, quote, saved, unquote. Last sentence. Again, in addition, the law required that at least 20% of employees in all departments of public administration be former Nazis. Departments failing to meet this requirement would be fined an amount equal to the salaries thus, quote, saved, unquote. These new legal claims and the quota system now meant that old party members had to be given first priority in hiring, and thus, more than 90% of the Nazi officials dismissed after 1945 found their way back into public service. Last sentence again. These new legal claims and the quota system now meant that old party members had to be given first priority in hiring, and thus more than 90% of the Nazi officials dismissed after 1945 found their way back into public service. Since public funds were so limited, and the civil service bureaucracy so overstaffed, by 1949 the German administrative regions, or Länder, were virtually bankrupt, for all practical purposes, former membership in the Nazi Party became a requirement for joining the civil service. Lander, by the way, L-A-N-D-E-R with an umlaut over the A. Last sentence again, and I realize this will appear stunning to those not familiar with it. I can't say as it sets me to doing the varsity rag, but it's vital that we understand this history, because, again, in order to understand the institutions which have evolved into the present Germany and understand the world situation, we have to study the history. Since public funds were so limited and the civil service bureaucracy so overstaffed, by 1949 the German administrative regions or Länder were virtually bankrupt, for all practical purposes, former membership in the Nazi Party became a requirement for joining the civil service. In addition to reinstituting the entire Third Reich civil service for all intents and purposes as a matter of law, the next article, Article 132, excludes from civil service all of those, and again, the language here is complex, excludes from civil service all of those excluded from the Third Reich civil service from 33 to 45, and as Inger Müller points out, they were excluded on the basis of racial grounds, or on racial grounds. Basically, they were excluded under the law for the protection of the German blood and German honor, that drawn up by Hans Globke. And Globke, of course, the Eminence Grise, the gray eminence behind Konrad Adenauer, and the individual who was in charge of running the Galen organization. Of the passage of Article 132, Inger Müller writes as follows. At the same time, Article 132 of the Basic Law, beginning again, at the same time, Article 132 of the Basic Law empowered the government to dismiss the whole class of, quote, outsiders, unquote, mentioned above, or, if they had been appointed for life after 1945, to place them, quote, in retirement, on waiting lists, or in a position with lower pay, unquote. These, quote, outsiders, unquote, were all those appointed to the judiciary or the civil service after the war who had not been eligible for promotion during the Third Reich. Since in the Nazi era, political reliability and, quote, racial purity, unquote, had been prerequisites for admission to both administrative training and universities, those who had been unable to complete their careers had all been political or, quote, racial, unquote, undesirables. The effect of Article 131, with its corresponding law, and Article 132 was thus just the same as if the Nazi, quote, law for restoration of the professional civil service, unquote, of 1933 had been reintroduced. Last few sentences again by way of emphasis. These, quote, outsiders, unquote, were all those appointed to the judiciary or the civil service after the war who had not been eligible for promotion during the Third Reich. Since in the Nazi era, political reliability and, quote, racial purity, unquote, had been prerequisites for admission to both administrative training and universities, those who had been unable to complete their careers had all been political or, quote, racial, unquote, undesirables. The effect of Article 131, with its corresponding law, and Article 132, was thus just the same as if the Nazi, quote, law for restoration of the professional civil service, unquote, of 1933 had been reintroduced. We're now going to turn to the addendum that was made to Article 131 in June of 1961, the same year that T.H. Tettens published The New Germany and the Old Nazis. In June of 1961, the Bundestag passed a law extending considerably the scope of the already controversial 131 law. During the debate, the Free Democrats had proposed to add the following sentences to the bill. Quote, former career officers and non-commissioned officers of SS military units in service before May 8, 1945, can be granted pensions upon application. Proof must be furnished that they served only in functions such as those of the regular army, unquote. The majority of legislators were unwilling to include this provision in the law explicitly, but the federal government did assure the former officers that they would proceed in this way all the same, and that the Minister of Finance had already budgeted the necessary funds. Now, bear in mind that even though this law, this addition to the 131 law didn't pass, the Adenauer government basically instituted it anyway to pension former non-commissioned officers of SS military units, and note again that the Minister of Finance had already budgeted the necessary funds. That was the aforementioned Ludwig Erhard, whose Nazi affiliations we discussed in the passage from the New Germany and the Old Nazis, and bear in mind that he succeeded Adenauer as Chancellor of Germany. Continuing here with Ingo Mueder's text, putting such a regulation into practice then required clarification of what counted as, quote, service similar to that in the regular army, unquote. The Federal Social Court in Kassel established the following principle, quote, anyone who saw service during the Second World War as a member of an SS combat unit, Waffen-SS, of a kind that, had these units not existed, would have been performed by soldiers in the regular army, is to be considered as a rule at least to have performed service similar to that in the regular army, unquote. With this clarification, the court recognized even the guard duty of the 2nd SS Death's Head Regiment at Dachau as, quote, service similar to that in the regular army, unquote. This addendum to Article 131 was not passed by the Bundestag, but the Adenauer government, in the same year that T.H. Tetens published The New Germany and the Old Nazis, basically instituted it anyway. And the Minister of Finance, actually no, the Minister of Economics was Ludwig Erhard, excuse me, the Minister of Finance was another loyal Third Reich graduate, correction there. He was close to Ludwig Erhard, but that was not Erhard proper. And as we're about to see, the courts themselves, the courts of Germany, were of the new, quote, new, unquote, Germany, were staffed with judges from the, quote, old, unquote, Germany, or from the old Germany, I shouldn't put that into quotes. And as we're going to see, that had a profound effect, a dominant effect, on the administration of German law in the German Federal Republic. Returning again to The New Germany and the Old Nazis by T.H. Tetens from 1961, just a few of the names of the prominent Third Reich judges who returned to power in the, quote, new, unquote, Germany. Here are the profiles of a few judges and prosecutors whose records have been cited in Der Spiegel and elsewhere in the press. Dr. Ernst Kanter, K-A-N-T-E-R, known as the, quote, hanging judge, unquote, in occupied Denmark, sentenced several hundred persons to death. Earlier in Germany, he had condemned dozens of, quote, enemies of the state, unquote, to death or hard labor. In 1950, he was put in charge of a department in the Federal Ministry of Justice. In 1958, he was appointed Senate President at the Federal Court in Karlsruhe, the equivalent of a U.S. Supreme Court judge, Karlsruhe, K-A-R-L-S-R-U-H-E. Another one, Dr. Konrad Roediger, R-O-E-D-I-G-E-R, former legal expert in the Foreign Office, was implicated by documents and linked with the liquidation of millions of Jews. He serves today as a high judge at the Federal Constitutional Court in Karlsruhe. Dr. Eisele, E-I-S-E-L-E, notorious Nazi terror judge in Prague, was returned by U.S. authorities to Czechoslovakia to stand trial as a war criminal. When released, after serving 5 years in prison, he was appointed director of the Upper Provincial Court in Stuttgart. Under mounting criticism, he was finally suspended in 1959. Dr. Otto Schweinsberger, S-C-H-W-E-I-N-S-B-E-R-G-E-R, served as a military judge in the East, sentenced dozens of people to be executed for minor violations of occupation rules. He became senior prosecutor in Frankfurt despite his Nazi record. He was suspended from office December of 1958 and later retired. Dr. Werner Rode, R-H-O-D-E, was known as a fanatical Nazi prosecutor before a special court in Prague, asked for dozens of death sentences for persons accused of being, quote, enemies of the Reich, unquote. Today, he serves as head of a department in the Ministry of Justice in Schleswig-Holstein. His name has been linked with several judicial scandals in that state. Dr. Rader Neuspel, R-E-H-D-E-R-K-N-O-E-S-P-E-L, once chief prosecutor in Prague, was called, quote, the hangman, unquote, for his ruthless persecution of Czech patriots. On February 8, 1944, he demanded the death sentence for 7 Czechs for having given food to a Soviet prisoner. One of the executed was a pregnant woman. He functions today as senior public prosecutor in Mannheim. Dr. Muhs, M-U-H-S, was president of a special court in Poland, Radom, R-A-D-O-M. left his mark there with many death sentences. He once condemned a Pole for having sheltered a Jewish child. He is today presiding judge at the Upper Provincial Court in Hamm. That's H-A-M-M. Dr. Bruckhaus, B-R-U-C-H-H-A-U-S, has a notorious record as Hitler's overeager prosecutor in Poland. Asked for the death sentence for a Dr. Neubeck, N-E-U-B-E-C-K, for, quote, being capable of hatred against Germany, unquote. He is today a prosecutor at the provincial court in Wuppertal, W-U-P-P-E-R-T-A-L. Dr. Hückenbroich, H-U-C-K-L-E-N-B-R-O-I-C-H, was presiding judge at a special court in Poznan, P-O-Z-N-A-N. According to Der Spiegel, he, quote, chopped off heads at the order of his Führer, unquote, for, quote, hostility to Germany, unquote, or stealing a piece of luggage, he imposed the death sentence. He serves today as senior judge at the provincial court in Wuppertal. Dr. Reimers, R-E-I-M-E-R-S, was once presiding judge of the appeals court in Czechoslovakia, practiced, quote, legal lynching, unquote, on a large scale. He serves today as judge at the provincial court in Ravensburg, R-A-V-E-N-S-B-U-R-G. Dr. Arthur Neumann, N-E-U-M-A-N-N, Nazi judge of a military court, wrote his wife during the war that he was, quote, proud to have earned the name of the, quote, bloody judge, unquote. He became Senate president of the provincial court in Berlin, Die Zeit, December 12, 1957. Dr. Harry von Rosenhevel, R-O-S-E-N-H-O-E-W-E-L, was professor of law. In 1942, advocated the conquest of Lebensraum in the East through, quote, special treatment of Poles and Jews, unquote. Today, he serves as senior federal prosecutor at the Oberverwaltungsgericht, a high administrative court. That's O-B-E-R-V-E-R-W-A-L-T-U-N-G-S-G-E-R-I-C-H-T. Next, Dr. Franz Schlüter, S-C-H-L-U-E-T-E-R, was one of Hitler's judges in Czechoslovakia and later in Austria. On April 28, 1945, he dispatched 17 people at once to the execution block. In his denazification procedure, Dr. Schlüter denied any guilt, but the presiding judge fined him 50,000 marks and stated, quote, never before has a defendant appeared before this court who has told so many lies, unquote. In 1950, Dr. Schlüter became a high official in the Federal Ministry of Justice. Later, he was appointed to an important position at the Federal Patent Office in Munich, that from the Frankfurter Rundschau of July 1, 1957. That, by way of just looking at some of the names, we're going to look at more of the names as we return to Hitler's Justice by Ingo Müller. Again, the patterns we've seen so far are characteristic. As I said before, read 'em and weep, baby. Read 'em and weep. What we're going to look at next from Hitler's Justice is the historical background to the reinstitution of the Third Reich judiciary. One of the things that was outlined by Kurt Ries in The Nazis Go Underground is that it would be virtually impossible for the Allied occupation forces to be able to get rid of all of the vestiges of the Third Reich without precluding the possibility of the reestablishment of a new society. This was one of the things they took into account. Also note that in an earlier installment of Radio Free America 37, we went into the primary importance of who wound up occupying Germany to the post-World War II survival plans of the Third Reich. And, of course, the British and Americans were seen as being the ideal occupiers because they would deal very leniently with the Third Reich judiciary, with the Third Reich alumni who were to be reintegrated into the new Germany. That proved to be an accurate assessment by the Third Reich, and it proved to be prophetic because that is exactly what happened. Of the impossibility of excluding the former Nazi judiciary, or at least the ostensible impossibility, the book Hitler's Justice by Ingo Müller describes the following. It soon became evident, however, that such draconian denazification measures would keep the German courts closed for good. In Westphalia, for example, 93% of court personnel had been members of either the Nazi Party or one of its subsidiary organizations. I would interject that one of the aspects of National Socialism, of such an effective and centrally organized totalitarian society, was the perpetuation of that society. Regardless of military conquest, it would not be possible to reconstitute a society that had been structured in such a totalitarian fashion without reinstituting some of the same people. Continuing, in the district of the Bomberg Court of Appeals, 302 out of 309 jurists had been in the party, and at the Petty Court in Schweinfurt, the figure was a solid 100%. Bomberg, B-A-M-B-E-R-G, Schweinfurt, S-C-H-W-E-I-N-F-U-R-T. In the American enclave of Bremen in the British zone, the Americans found a grand total of two judges who could be considered to have an untainted record. One solution was to call back judges who had retired prior to 1933 and to employ attorneys on the bench part-time. It soon became clear that these measures would not solve the problem. The British decided to treat all jurists who had joined the Nazi Party after 1937 as having a clean slate, including former army judges who for a long time had not been allowed to join. When these steps also failed to produce a sufficient number of acceptable judges, they came up with a, quote, piggyback method, unquote. For every untainted judge, one with a bad record could also be employed. Even this restriction was lifted in June of 1946, and every jurist could be considered for the bench who had been through denazification. When the judges from the Weimar Republic were sent into retirement for the second time, their places were quickly taken by the bulk of special court judges and former SA members, who by this time had gone through the very liberal denazification procedures. By the way, the special courts, along with the people's courts, which you will hear a reference to later, were, to make a long story short, basically kangaroo courts set up by the Third Reich to expedite the administration of, quote, justice, unquote, i.e. basically the imprisonment or liquidation of political enemies. Continuing. The denazification commissions of the British zone and the similar tribunals of the American zone had begun with strong measures, but were soon classifying virtually everyone in either Category 4, quote, followers, unquote, or Category 5, quote, exonerated, unquote. Other Allied authorities viewed with concern the, quote, returning stream of Nazis to the German judiciary and judicial system, unquote, that resulted. By 1948, 30% of the presiding judges and 80 to 90% of the assisting judges at the county courts in the British zone were former party members. The other Western zones presented a similar picture. A report from the American Commissioner for the State of Bavaria to the High Commissioner John McCloy, entitled, quote, Some Aspects of Renazification in Bavaria, reveals that in 1949, 752 of 924 judges and public prosecutors were former Nazis, or 81%. According to the study, quote, the return of party members to positions of power and influence is proof of how little has changed, unquote. Indeed, that last sentence again, because it could almost be viewed as the hallmark of this entire broadcast. According to the study, quote, the return of party members to positions of power and influence is proof of how little has changed, unquote. For example, in the district of Lower Bavaria Upper Palatinate between November 1948 and March of 1949, when government agencies were being reopened and new staff was being hired, it had been impossible to find jobs for 58 former government employees who had not been Nazis. But during the same period, in the same district, 69 former Nazi party members had been reemployed in some sector of public service. Well, obviously, Article 131 and 132 made that basically the official position of the Federal Republic. Next, we're going to take a look to the Law for the Protection of German Blood and German Honor. That was the co-designer of that was Hans Globke, whom we've already dealt with. And we're going to take a look at that law and some of its implications right now, returning again to Hitler's Justice by Inge Müller. Of the three Nuremberg laws, it was above all the law for the protection of German blood and German honor which acquired significance for the courts. It prescribed penitentiary sentences for both partners if they married in defiance of the law and punished, quote, dishonor to the race, unquote, with either prison or penitentiary. In the latter case, only the male partner was to be punished, whether Jewish or, quote, of German blood, unquote, while the female went free. The reports on Germany published by the leaders of the Social Democratic Party in exile had already characterized the, quote, blood law, unquote, as, quote, Stryker pornography in legal form, unquote. Julius Stryker, S-T-R-E-I-C-H-E-R, the Nazi Gauleiter in Nuremberg, was publisher of the viciously anti-Semitic and widely distributed weekly paper Der Stürmer, or The Stormtrooper. That's capital D-E-R, capital S-T-U-R-M-E-R, with an umlaut over the U. However, it was the, quote, scholarly penetration, unquote, of the meaning of these laws and their interpretation by the courts which revealed even clearer traits of sexual pathology. Ultimately, that law became the legal pretext for the liquidation of the Third Reich's racial enemies, quote unquote, including, of course, Jews and Gypsies. We're going to look at some more of the nomenclature of the reconstituted Third Reich judiciary. This, again, from Hitler's Justice by Ingo Müller. And we're going to begin by taking a look at some of the judges who had helped to provide the legal, quote, scholarly, unquote, underpinnings and commentaries on the law for the protection of the German blood and German honor. Müller writes, for the authors of the most widely used, quote, scholarly, unquote, commentaries on the law for the protection of the blood, participation in the crimes of the Third Reich from their desks also proved no hindrance to a post-war career. Judge Boschen, B-O-S-C-H-A-N, returned to his petty court in Hildesheim, H-I-L-D-E-S-H-E-I-M. County Court Judge Franz Mossfeller, M-A-S-S-F-E-L-L-E-R, received a call to the Federal Ministry of Justice in Bonn, as has already been mentioned. And Dr. Friedrich Nost, K-N-O-S-T, who headed the section for racial identity, which handled proofs of, quote, Aryan blood, unquote, at the Reich Race Office of the SS, became president of the Administrative District of Lower Saxony in Braunschweig, B-R-A-U-N-S-C-H-W-E-I-G. An even more strictly racist commentary existed, so, quote, sterling in quality, unquote, that Roland Freisler, F-R-E-I-S-L-E-R, in his review of it, said it should not, quote, be missing from the bookshelves of any guardian of the law, unquote. Its authors, too, found places in the post-war civil service. Dr. Wilhelm Stuckart, S-T-U-C-K-A-R-T, formerly undersecretary in the Reich Ministry of the Interior, where he was in charge of all, quote, Jewish questions, unquote, was classified as a, quote, follower, unquote, in his denazification hearing and became city treasurer in Helmstedt in 1949, and later managing director of the Institute for Promotion of the Economy in Lower Saxony. Helmstedt is H-E-L-M-S-T-E-D-T. Stuckart's co-author, Hans Glubke, also began his post-war career as a city treasurer in Aachen, A-A-C-H-E-N. The post led him to the federal chancellery in 1949, where he quickly rose to become undersecretary and the most influential civil servant in the new republic. 17 of the judges who had handed down decisions in race law trials in Hamburg were still living after the war. Of these 17, 11 found new positions in the judicial system. So obviously, having administered law and legal commentary on the law for the protection of German blood did not prevent the return of most of these individuals to positions either in the judiciary or in other aspects of German government, post-World War II German government. Continuing now with a discussion of judges from the People's Court. Again, this was a drumhead court, a kangaroo court established by the Third Reich to expedite the handing down of, quote, justice, unquote, to political and racial enemies. Even membership in the People's Court did not pose an obstacle to employment in the higher ranks of the post-war system. The prosecutors Karl Herr von Bellwinkel, Dr. Bruchhaus, Dr. Heinz Günther Lehl, Kurt Jager, Dr. Konrad Hoher, Helmut Scherf, and Karl Spahr all served as public prosecutors again after 1945, and as a rule, were promoted to the rank of first prosecutor or senior prosecutor. Spellings, Karl Herr von Bellwinkel, K-A-R-L-H-E-R-M-A-N-N-N, B-E-L-L-W-I-N-K-E-L, Bruchhaus, B-R-U-C-H-H-A-U-S, Heinz Günther Lehl, Dr. H-E-I-N-Z hyphen G-U-N-T-H-E-R, umlaut over the U, L-E-L-L. Kurt Jager, J-A-A-G-E-R, Dr. Konrad Hoher, H-O, umlaut H-E-R, Helmut Scherf, S-C-H-E-R-F, Karl Spahr, S-P-A-H-R. Continuing. Occasionally, service in association with this, quote, instrument of national socialist terror, unquote, as the federal Supreme Court once called the tribunal, was the starting point for an outstanding career. Alfred Münich made a judge there in 1937, and Helmut Jaeger, first prosecutor at the People's Court, became respectively presiding judge of a panel and prosecutor at the Munich Court of Appeals after 1945, and Franz Schlüter, prosecutor and officer in charge of executions there, became presiding judge of a panel at the Federal Patent Court in Munich, S-C-H-L-U-T-E-R. In appointing Nazi jurists to new positions after the war, those responsible often showed a lack of tact. Günter Schultz, S-C-H-U-L-T-Z, who was a member of the 6th Criminal Panel of the Hamburg County Court in 1940-41, had participated in race law decisions, was made a Court of Appeals judge in Hamm after the war. And the interesting thing here is to note the position in which he was serving. He was basically serving on passing legal decisions, passing legal judgment on people, survivors, and the relatives of survivors of legal decisions or the results of legal decisions that he had made when he was a judge in the Third Reich. Repeating the last couple of sentences, the last two sentences. In appointing Nazi jurists to new positions after the war, those responsible often showed a lack of tact. Günter Schultz, who was a member of the 6th Criminal Panel of the Hamburg County Court in 1940-41, had participated in race law decisions, was made a Court of Appeals judge in Hamm after the war. Then he, of all people, was named presiding judge of a board in Hamburg to hear the cases of war victims claiming damages. Here, he decided claims filed by the survivors of his own earlier trials and by the relatives of those he had sentenced to death. Obviously, interrupting here, this is a classic case of the fox being appointed to guard the chicken house. Continuing, as a prosecutor at the Katowice Special Court during the war, Karl-Heinz Ottersbach successfully recommended a large number of death sentences. Afterward, he became public prosecutor for political crimes at the county court of Lüneburg, where he again acquired a dubious reputation. At least once, Ottersbach told communist defendants during their trial, quote, "I see going to prison between 1933 and 1945 didn't teach you a thing," unquote. By the way, spellings, Katowice, K-A-T-T-O-W-I-T-Z, or K-A-T-O-W-I-C-E, and Karl-Heinz Ottersbach, O-T-T-E-R-S-B-A-C-H, Lüneburg, L-U-Umlaut, N-E-B-U-R-G. Continuing. On December 1st, 1958, a, quote, "Central Office of State Administrations for the Prosecution of National Socialist Crimes," unquote, was created in Ludwigsburg for the for the purpose of coordinating the various investigations underway. Named to head it was Erwin Schüle, S-C-H-U-Umlaut-L-E, who had joined the SA in 1933 and the Nazi Party in 1935. It hardly came as a surprise that Schüle, who as head of the Central Office must have known the true extent of Nazi crimes better than anyone else, recommended in 1964 that a statute of limitations be imposed in May of 1965 and that no murders from the Nazi era be prosecuted after that time. Finally, in late 1965, he was replaced by a man of integrity, the senior prosecutor Adalbert Ruckerl, that's A-D-A-L-B-E-R-T, R-U-Umlaut-C-K-E-R-L. Schüle's departure from Ludwigsburg was sweetened for him by promotion to the post of Prosecutor General in Stuttgart. Continuing, Wolfgang Immerwahr Frankel, F-R-A-Umlaut-N-K-E-L, during the war a department head at the Reich Office of Public Prosecutions, was responsible for a large number of pleas of nullity entered against, quote, "overly lenient decisions," unquote. The president of the Stuttgart Court of Appeals, Richard Schmidt, S-C-H-M-I-D, once referred to him as a, quote, "fanatic" on the death penalty, unquote. On March 21st, 1962, Frankel was appointed Prosecutor General of the Federal Republic. An investigation into his past was closed by the Karlsruhe Court of Appeals on September 3rd, 1964, with the remarkable argument that no evidence existed to prove that Frankel, by now the highest-ranking prosecutor in the country, had ever, quote, "even doubted the validity of the regulations named during the war, let alone recognized their invalidity." Last sentence again. An investigation into his past was closed by the Karlsruhe Court of Appeals on September 3, 1964, with the remarkable argument that no evidence existed to prove that Frankel, by now the highest-ranking prosecutor in the country, had ever, quote, even doubted the validity of the regulations named during the war, let alone recognized their invalidity, unquote. After Frankel's past, which he had artfully concealed, became known to the public, it still took months to force his resignation, and he has continued to receive a full pension to this day. Well, in addition to obviously imperfectly administering claims by victims of the Third Reich, this reconstituted Third Reich judiciary and the appointment of a Third Reich legal graduate, so to speak, to positions of power in the Federal Republic, this had a profound effect on the formation of German law, and we're going to begin to take a look at that now. Continuing with Hitler's Justice by Ingo Müller. On September 8, 1961, the law on judges was amended to give all judges and public prosecutors who had, quote, participated in the administration of criminal law from September 1, 1939 to May 9, 1945, unquote, the opportunity to resign from office by June 30, 1962, with no reduction in pension. Only 149 former jurists of the National Socialist era took advantage of it, however. Most of them chose to remain in office even after this date, and several continued to exercise influence on the legal order of the young democracy from high positions. In the spring of 1971, a major case involving physicians from the euthanasia program came up for review before the second criminal panel of the Federal Supreme Court under presiding judge Paul-Heinz Baldus, B-A-L-D-U-S. That's P-A-U-L-H-E-I-N-Z, by the way, his first name. Note here, I'm going to interrupt briefly. We're moving up through time. The decision of the law on judges, giving Nazi judges a chance to resign with full pension from the judiciary, was unsuccessful. Most of them chose to stay on. That was in September of 61. Now we're the spring of 71. In the spring of 1971, a major case involving physicians from the euthanasia program came up for review before the second criminal panel of the Federal Supreme Court under presiding judge Paul-Heinz Baldus. The prosecutor representing the victims, Professor Friedrich Karl Kaul, K-A-U-L, requested that Judge Baldus excuse himself from the case. In his motion, Kaul referred to testimony at the trial of a former SS officer at Auschwitz named Oswald Kaduk, K-A-D-U-K, who had been sentenced to life imprisonment. Kaduk testified that he had received his orders from the Führer's chancellery from, quote, a certain Baldus, now a presiding judge in Karlsruhe, unquote. In 1939, Baldus had in fact moved from the Department of Criminal Justice at the Reich Ministry of Justice to the Reich Chancellery, where he became a member of the legal staff. During the war, he served as a field judge. No decision was ever made on the motion for recusation. Instead, Judge Baldus broke off the proceedings and left the bench. He was due to retire shortly, in any case. And more about Judge Baldus' legal career, post-World War II legal career, and note here that we're going to see some of the influence of the reconstitution of the Third Reich's judiciary on the law of the Federal Republic. This is going to be amplified considerably in the next section that we look at after this one. Before this, however, Baldus had managed to leave his mark on legal developments in the Federal Republic. As presiding judge of the disciplinary court at the Federal Supreme Court, the panel for disciplinary proceedings against judges and prosecutors, he had served as the country's highest-ranking guardian of professional standards. And as presiding judge in the trial of members of the, quote, Society for German-Soviet Friendship, unquote, he had put himself in the forefront of the prosecution of communists. On July 28, 1955, Baldus's panel charged officers of this organization with, quote, participation in an association guilty of treason toward the Constitution, unquote, with, again quoting, membership in a secret society, unquote, and with, again quoting, participation in a criminal association, unquote. The panel found the crime aggravated by the fact that the society, which had not been made illegal in most Länder, had, quote, held a meeting of the steering committee while the trial was taking place in Karlsruhe and issued public statements, unquote. Another decision handed down by Judge Baldus has had an effect on other cases up to the present. It involves the peculiar definition of, quote, force, unquote, in connection with charges of unlawful duress developed by the second criminal panel under Baldus's leadership in the notorious Lepley decision of August 1969. That's spelled L-A-E-P-P-L-E. Now, what we're going to see here is a legal precedent for, or basically an application of law, which is representative of a key reinstitution of the Third Reich criminal statute, namely defining legitimate nonviolent protest as the use of force against the state and making it officially treasonous. And again, we're going to see a projection of this, an amplification of this, in the next passage that we deal with after this one.